Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good Wednesday morning. Is it Wednesday already? Amy Jacobson here and in for Dan Proft, the one and only. Can you hear us? Rob Blagojevich, how are you?
I'm good. Good morning.
Can you hear your headphones? There you go. Flip it over there. There you go. Now can you hear us?
Oh, much better.
Is that much? No. Now the other one's flipped over. Here, watch. I know. It's okay. Baby steps.
How's that?
That's much better. So what have you been up to?
Oh, several things. I've been doing the cameos that I do. I don't know if you know that I do those.
Yes.
But that's a little bit of what I do. I do consulting work for a logistics company. I'm working with another company. It's a client of mine that provides fuel, diesel fuel and other kind of fuel to companies or municipalities and other places for the lowest possible price.
Really?
Working on a docuseries.
Oh, that's right. Which one?
We're calling it What Keeps You Awake at Night. So I go around the country, ideally, and ask people the things they worry about, what keeps them awake.
And what are you hearing from people?
All kinds of things, and I suspect we'll be hearing from some of the callers this morning, right?
Let's ask them. What keeps them awake? 312-642-5600. Turnkey.pro. Answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment. For me, it's obvious. Crime, every time, and all my kids, my two boys, but also every kid that I coach, every time I leave them, I say, please be careful. Make smart decisions. If somebody, I tell them too, if somebody asks for your cell phone, give them your cell phone. If somebody asks for your car, get out of your car. Don't fight it. Just give them what they want, because crime is out of control. And there's my auto dealer, I was there yesterday. They had crime. People break in the middle of the night, take keys off the rack, and just take cars out. And then they eventually dump them somewhere in the neighborhood, but that's what keeps me awake at night. What keeps you awake at night?
That's among the things that keep me awake at night, of course. And, of course, Chicago's riddled with crime. We're the epicenter of crime in the country. And we have leadership that's failed to address it like it ought to. And what you have are these young gangbangers who have complete contempt for law, complete contempt for authority. They laugh at authority. And they know the police are on the run because the politicians have sold them out. Democrat politicians, by the way.
And what do you think of the Safety Act? I'm sure you're familiar with that.
I think it sucks.
I think it sucks.
No, it's terrible. It defies common sense. It's impractical, and it's a utopian thought of what human nature is. And I have real experience in this for many reasons, including the 8 years I spent sheltering in place for politics, not for crimes.
Well, why are they doing this? I know that they want to attract the black voters, but even black people and black politicians, Richard Ervin, Superintendent Brown, 100 county state's attorneys out of 102 in the state are against the Safety Act. And I was there when Pritzker signed it. The bill is about this. I think it's 700 pages. And you know no one in that room read that bill. And they're touting, like, this is the greatest thing. So if somebody gets, you know, thrown in jail for petty theft, they don't have to, you know, no cash bail. But, no, I say you do the crime, you do the time. I mean, I'm a compassionate person, but too bad, sucker. You robbed somebody. You stole something that was not yours. Too bad.
There's a lot of really impractical things in that bill. One of them is that starting January the 1st, when that bill goes into effect, if you're a gangbanger or a group of gangbangers and you're hanging around a street corner and you're trespassing and a police officer says to you, get off the street corner, get out of here, they don't have to leave for fear that they'll be arrested because a police officer can no longer arrest them. The police officer can only write them a ticket.
Oh.
Okay? Now, this is a message to these gangbangers that they don't have to fear anything. And again, I spent those 8 years in prison, again, for politics, not for crimes. And I saw what a lot of my colleagues were like. It was really us, you know, inmates against the police. And when the police weren't around or they felt they were not really focused on doing their jobs, the inmates ran the asylum.
What was the craziest thing you saw in prison?
Well, let me think about that. There were a lot of them.
Well, what are some of them? Because I have a friend that's in prison. I visit him, you know, every so often, just, you know, to check in. And it's crazy. Even the process to get in to see an inmate is crazy. It's like a scary movie. Well, not a scary. I mean, it's just a strange process, how to get in, how they check you, what you have to bring, what you can't bring. Can't wear a bra with an underwire. I mean, there's so many rules and restrictions that it's different for state prison than federal prison. And this, the whole process. And then you're locked in. And I'm claustrophobic. So that locking in thing doesn't really work well with me.
Well, Amy, the reason they do that is because it's very common practice that if they don't, inmates will have things smuggled in, like drugs, contraband, or smuggled out. And
Smuggled out, really?
Or smuggled out, sure. It depends on the stuff that they do. For example, I'll tell you some stories as the show unfolds if you'd like to hear them. But, you know, I have street cred on this. I'm the only governor to have put into a higher security prison. I spent my first 32 months in a prison that was behind what the inmates called a razor wire. My home was a 6-foot by 8-foot prison cell, a real prison, like the ones you see in movies. Yeah. There were murderers in there. Sureños and Norteños, Tejanos, Crips and Bloods, Aryan Nation. White racist guys, you'd have swastikas tatted on their heads, right? That was my world for 32 months.
I still can't believe they did that to you.
And I learned a lesson.
What?
That the warden has almost complete discretion in whether or not he or she can let an inmate go home. Did you know that?
No, I did not know that.
So if you couldn't get President Trump to send you home like he did me,
right?
If you can really kiss up to the warden has the power to do it. Rarely, if ever, does it. But I saw it happen once. And I don't know if you have time now.
I know. Yeah, go. Yeah.
Well, there was a terrible fight with a couple of inmates, and these guys make makeshift weapons. They call them shivs. In lieu of knives.
Yeah, I'm familiar with the shiv.
Right. By the way, a lot of these guys are really resourceful. It's amazing how they can do so much with so little. Anyway, this guy had a shiv, and these two guys had a conflict, and they were fighting, and the one guy was literally slicing up the other inmate, kill him. Blood flowing all over. A third party, another inmate, got involved, pulled the guy off, saved the other inmate's life. Uh-huh. And because of what he did, the guy had spent like 10 or 12 years in prison already. The warden rewarded him for saving the other inmate's life and sent him home.
Wow. What was he in for? Do you remember?
You know what? I don't really know. Probably a drug dealer.
Yeah.
Most of them were that. There were some murderers there. But if you're guessing based on the numbers, in all likelihood, he was probably a drug dealer.
So you saw the fight, but you didn't jump in?
I didn't see the fight.
Okay, you just heard about it.
I saw the tail end of the fight because everybody started congregating because it was...
it's a fight. I mean, that's what people do.
And it was really violent. It was really bad. Yeah. And, you know, the police were... The correctional officers were all called in. There were a whole bunch of them. And so I caught the tail end of it and then learned not long after that the guy that was heroic, actually, to save the other guy's life was sent home.
Wow. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment. Let's go to Bob in Buffalo Grove. You're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, Amy. Love talking to you and to the great Amy and Dan show. And today we've got Governor Blagojevich co-hosting with you, and I'm looking forward to hearing his comments and what he has to say. I met him last year at the Freedom Summit, where he gave a good overview of his past years. And for you, Governor Blagojevich, are you still a Trumpocrat?
Absolutely.
With all that's been going on. I mean, it's just amazing.
Yes, I am, very much so. And I'm heartsick to see what they're doing to him.
Yeah.
I recognize all of it because they did it to me. And I know the playbook. I know what they do. It's a trumped-up fake thing over archives. They were in there with a search warrant that they can get. They always get one. They could allege really no crimes and get a search warrant. And the idea that they would do something like this to a former president is really an extension of what they did to your governor. And I would assume, Bob, based upon the fact that you called this radio show and Amy, you probably voted against me, and I want to thank you for that, because had more of you done that, I'd have never gone to prison. But I didn't break a law, cross the line, or take a penny. It was all politics.
No.
And they want to destroy you politically when you take on the establishment, which I did, the Madigan Empire in Springfield. And what Trump is doing in Washington is the same thing, and they're determined to destroy him and keep him from running for president again.
And there's new information on that we're going to get to at 5:30. But right now, real quick, what scares you? Nick, on the northwest side, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, ever since. By the way, hello, Governor.
Hi, Nick.
It's nice to have you back. And again, thank you for my, what I call my old man riding card, my ride free pass for the public transportation. And
thanks.
By the way, never say to a woman that it's your old lady riding card. I just do a Ruth Buzzy on you. Tell her it's your young lady riding card, you know.
Right.
But anyhow, yeah, I still got a couple of lumps here. But anyhow, I've been worried, concerned. Very much, actually, even though I can't do much about world events. But ever since this administration came in, it seems like it was like flipping a switch. It was nice and bright and cheery, or at least things were working out when Trump was in, despite all the people criticizing him all the time about what he says here or there. But anyhow, and then all of a sudden, here we are, the pipeline being shut down. The first day, remember that one that was being built down to Texas?
The Keystone Pipeline.
They couldn't let that go, but their friends in the world, they feel like they have no fear of their friends in the world, you know, like the ones that control the oil in certain parts of the world and all that. These are their friends. I mean, this is really kind of scary. What Xi threatening people, top politicians, don't go to Taiwan, you know. It's not going to be healthy for you. I mean, what the hell's going on, you know?
All right, thanks,
but
Nick.
It's nice to hear you again.
Thanks, Nick.
Okay. All right, thanks.
All the best to you.
Real quick, let's go to Craig in Mount Greenwood, loyal listener. Hi, Craig.
Hey, good morning, Amy. Thanks for taking my call, and good morning, Rob. Well,
hi, Craig.
Exactly right. These people, these leftists that basically took him out and everything like that, they were just getting warmed up and everything like that, and they didn't have even nearly the power they have now. Now you got all these three-letter agencies, you got all the so much of the media and politicians. They've all gone in with the left, basically. I mean, look at what they did here with Trump and everything. Totally unlawful, that raid and everything. And I mean, we don't have a chance unless the Lord's going to have to step in on this one. This is beyond our ability to take and get corrected. What do you think, Rav?
Yes, Craig, I say keep hope alive. And I say your reference to God and the Lord and having faith in him, I think is critical. I do think if you look at history, and I had 2,896 days in prison to catch up on my reading.
Good for you.
I read a lot, and I've read history. I read the Bible in certain ways. And I do believe something Martin Luther King used to say, and that is that once in a while God intervenes in the affairs of life to correct things or just set things in a direction. When things are going wrong, there's a reason why the Nazis ultimately lost. There's a reason why communism fell. There's a reason why when evil and wickedness is on top for a while, it doesn't last forever. And so I would not give up hope. And as a citizen, this what you're doing, calling radio stations like this, talking to Amy and her colleague Dan, being active and involved and having your voices heard is what you should do. You have a duty as a citizen to do it. Don't let these politicians who are career politicians, part of an establishment in Washington, take your government away from you. So stay active, stay involved, raise your voices, make some friends and encourage them to see the wisdom of your position.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So, I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630, and learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630, or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Good Wednesday morning. Amy Jacobson here. Rod Blagojevich, former governor of Illinois. Congressman, what else have you done? Singer at backyard party, block parties, singing some Elvis, which we could get to later today if you want.
Yes, I did that recently.
Oh, you did?
I did it at my lawyer, Leonard Goodman's house. He has an annual party, and I sang two songs. I sang Don't Be Cruel, and of course, Jailhouse Rock.
Okay. Oh, yeah, yeah.
I know every word of that song.
All right. So help me out here. You've obviously friends with President Trump. He saved your life.
He did.
Got you out of prison years before your sentence. Well, how long were you supposed to be? Would you still be in prison if he didn't help you?
Yeah, I'd be coming home in May of 2024.
Oh, my God.
Imagine.
A whole different world you'd be coming home to. But you came home to a whole different world.
Very much.
And then right when you got home, COVID hit.
Yes. And for probably everybody in the country, sheltering in place at home was hard. For me, it was a breeze because I had 8 years experience sheltering in place in a place away from my family. So that wasn't a hard adjustment for me.
Oh, it was so hard for me. It was so, I mean, I'd spend hours in the car just to get out of the house because everybody was in the house learning, and I just siphon Wi-Fi off of the piggery down the street and sit outside there because it was too much. I mean, and it didn't stop. It went on and on for years and years. So,
yep.
And so President Trump, I know you're very grateful to him, and I've met him. I went to Mar-a-Lago. And when was the last time you were at Mar-a-Lago?
I was there in February.
Are you the mole?
I am not. No.
Are you sure?
I'm absolutely certain.
No, I'm not the mole either. No, but who do you think the mole is?
Oh, it could be any number of people, but I would suspect it's probably, a staffer that was brought on later on in the process, probably somebody who's really not that loyal or clearly not that loyal or devoted to be a mole like that.
Because the new information this morning, which is being reported by CBS News and NBC, I don't know how they got this information. Well, clearly they got it from the DOJ or FBI. But now that they're saying that the reason they moved in is because they found documents, they heard that things were moving and that they found classified documents in other parts of his compound on Mar-a-Lago. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. Republican lawmakers from around the country sounding off on this. Here's Roy Blunt, Senator, Republican from Missouri.
Do you believe it was right for the president to take those documents to Mar-a-Lago?
He should have turned the documents over and apparently had turned a number of documents over. He should have turned over all of them. I imagine he knows that very well now.
Then you've got different governors. Governor Hogan, Larry Hogan from Maryland.
It's hard to believe that the Justice Department, the FBI, would take steps unless they had something pretty serious that they were investigating. We just don't know the facts yet.
And Sununu from New Hampshire, right? Governor of New Hampshire, Republican. Yes.
This has been a year and a half in the making, right? The former President Trump has been out of office for going on 2 years now. I think this is a coincidence just happening a few months before the midterm elections and all that sort of thing. So, you know, this is unprecedented, and they had to have an unprecedented strategy, which they clearly didn't have. They're on their heels. They don't know what to do. We want to see the information so we can have this discussion.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line. You can also text us at 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. As soon as that raid happened, I thought of you. I'm like, here we go again. The government, you know, they're pushing the narrative for the Democratic Party. They want to take somebody down who's not, because to make sure that Trump does not run again. Midterms are right around the corner. And what do we have here? Is this just a political hit job?
It is a political hit job by the FBI that has now become an arm of the DNC. And this is disgusting and dangerous to our democracy. It's worse than dangerous. It's the stuff the KGB does. And when it happens to you like it happened to me, you recognize it immediately. And they're doing it, the timing, no accident. It's done because the Democrats are facing a very bad election cycle. If present trends were about to continue, so they wanted to change the discussion to topic and put Trump and those issues back on center stage. The problem is the media runs with these stories. They love these stories. Trump brings ratings.
Right. CNN's ratings dropped dramatically once Trump was out of office.
Yeah.
So they need Trump.
They do. They need Trump to bash Trump so that those haters of President Trump will tune them in again. It's really a cynical business. And, when they arrested me and then I was handcuffed in the back of the FBI's vehicle at 6 o'clock in the morning, a sitting governor, right? And I'm stunned. Like, what are you arresting me for?
What did they say?
He said, for the sale of President-elect Obama's Senate seat. I said, what? It was so preposterous.
And because that charge was,
It was reversed dropped. Eventually. Eventually it was reversed by the appellate court. It was never a crime.
Yeah, but people don't know that.
They don't know it.
And so we're saying it again to let you know.
Thank you. July 2015, the appellate court could never uphold that unlawful standard. Because if I was selling it, Obama was buying it. It was a political discussion about political deals. It's how government works. And if they upheld that standard, government would shut down everywhere. So they could never do that. Eventually, after keeping me in prison for four and a half years, they finally ruled on it. Having said all of that, he told me that my first thought was, this is so laughable. I mean, I'm not claiming to be Einstein, but I'm not that stupid. How could you ever get away with something like that? So I'm thinking the media, your right. former colleagues, would laugh this out of court, literally, and that the tables would turn on those FBI people. And that was perhaps one of the many disillusioning moments I had, because the media just ran with the narrative because people tune in and it's ratings. They're not interested right. in the truth. They're interested in ratings.
No, and they like to see people suffer.
They
think.
Really do.
Isn't that sad? At one point in time, I thought Eric Zorn would be happy if I was dead. Because he kept hounding me. I'm like, do you want me dead? Because I feel like you'd be happy if you could ride my obit. Yeah. You know, I mean, isn't that weird, though? But when they're hounding you like that and just trying to take you down, they will stop at nothing because stuff sells. So the FBI buried the Hunter Biden laptop story, right. which we learned from Zuckerberg himself
right.
when he was on the Joe Rogan podcast.
Right.
So President Trump yesterday, I'm a little worried. On True Social. Now he's demanding, this is what he tweeted out. The presidential election was badly and irreparably tainted by the FBI's fake description of the laptop from hell to Facebook and the lamestream media. And for many other reasons as well, declare the rightful winner or hold a new election now. Our country, which is failing badly, knows the score and will never accept criminal election interference. The FBI just fired its special agent in charge of this outrageous and very illegal assault on the Constitution of the United States of America. Do you think he's losing it?
No.
Or he's just, because he spoke, I haven't heard his voice like this, I don't think ever.
I did nothing wrong. And it's the exact same thing here. We were essentially attacked. We were broken into. They opened up safes. They brought safe crackers in. They brought many, many FBI agents in. All right before the midterms, and all when I have the best poll numbers I've ever had. This is a political attack on our country, and it's a disgrace. And the people understand it. The people understand it. And they could have come in, and they could have talked to us, and they could have taken whatever they needed. But instead, they raided it. They took my passports. They took things that they should have never taken with that are privileged. And it's a disgrace to our country. It really is. It's just, and it just never ends. It's the same people, the same leaks, the same, they leak to the same places, the same people doing the leaking. It's a disgrace. It's a disgrace.
I mean, how much more can he handle? He had two impeachment trials. Yeah. And, you know, the Russian collusion was a complete hoax. That was right. just another way to take him out of the right. office with FBI helping yet again.
Right.
Because you had, you know, the Call two lovebirds and Mueller. Stock saying, you know, don't worry, we'll make sure we get him out or we'll make sure that he doesn't win.
Struck in Page.
Yes. Yeah. The two lovebirds. Right. You know, we're texting back and forth. Right. So how can anybody trust the FBI and how can people not feel for President Trump? 312-642-5600. Turnkey.pro, answer line 64636. Type in DA and then a quick comment. Have you talked to him? Have you reached out to Trump? Because you know what he's going through. You probably would want to hear from you.
Well, I've publicly supported him and publicly criticized, you know, this, what they're doing to him. And I talked to him in February when I saw him at Mar-a-Lago and mm-hmm. thanked him again. It was just an opportunity to thank him again. And he was very friendly. And I mentioned, even in February, you know, I
be
see
careful.
Very much so. And I
oh,
see
so you warned him? You
very
told
much,
him.
Yeah. I told him, I see what they're doing to you. I know the playbook and what it leads to. I didn't expect that they were going to raid Mar-a-Lago, but the fact that they're determined to try to do something, to find something to destroy him and charge him with crimes, very much evident to me long before even February.
Wow.
This is the new politics, and it's again, it's beyond, you know, disgraceful. This is our founding fathers are rolling over in their graves. It's not what our country was supposed to be. That you have this branch out of the executive, this part out of the executive branch of government that has uncontrolled power, and these prosecutors who have no accountability, who turn themselves into political weapons and political hitmen. It's Soviet style police state politics.
Henry in St. Charles, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer. Good morning.
Good morning. On the news, on this station, I've been hearing again and again there were many subpoenas given to Trump. His legal team turned them down. But I don't hear anyone saying, why did they turn it down? You know, because the other side, the flip side is, until just a day or so ago, yesterday, I was hearing, oh my gosh, I was hearing that they didn't even send a subpoena, they didn't ask.
So no, they just didn't work.
Story and no answers.
Well, you're an attorney, right?
I don't believe they sent any subpoenas.
No,
I believe
they
these
just,
lawyers would have complied.
They
course.
Should have sent a subpoena, yeah. And they would right. have complied because they did. Thanks, Henry, for the phone call. They did comply earlier. They did hand over boxes of evidence, and they've gone through them now. They said 185 are classified documents, 67 of those labeled confidential, 92 marked secret, and 25 labeled top secret. But the problem is, I don't believe anything that they say.
Well, that's right.
They could write down whatever they want, and exactly. I don't trust them.
No, they lie. FB lie.
Oh, FB lie. I like that.
FB lie.
Is that? Did you create that?
I did not.
We should. You know what? You can You can make money on a T-shirt. FB lie instead of FBI. I like that.
Okay.
All right. Good. Somebody, we got to start. Justin, you got to start working on that. That's good. All right, Verlon on the South Side. You're on Chicago's Morning Answer. Good morning.
How you doing, Amy? How you doing, Governor?
How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Well, you know, I've been a supporter of yours for a very long time.
Thank you.
So my question to you is, do you feel any vindication now that people are getting their just desserts that help railroad you like a Mike, like a Mike Manigan that actually took money?
Wow. I believe God works in mysterious ways. There's a reason for everything. I do believe I have this theory. It's a theory, but I have evidence to back it up, that Madigan was involved in what happened to me, that he was working with Fitzgerald, the U.S. attorney, because Madigan had pulled me aside one time, maybe a year before, when we were fighting, and said to me, you know, you're a young man. I think you're really playing a dangerous game, something along those lines.
Really?
Yeah, and then he began an impeachment process in February, 10 months before I was arrested, because I outmaneuvered him and gave free public transportation to all of our seniors, when he put a big sales tax increase on people in here in Cook County.
Oh.
And
yeah, that's right. He didn't like that.
Yeah. And so, and I had other indications that he was doing those things. So I do think there's something to that. Look, Madigan and everybody else down in Springfield got rich. The only one who didn't was me. And I ended up doing 8 years in prison. I think that should be a beginning point of discussion to see who were the ones that are corrupt and who weren't. Madigan got rich. He had an empire there that he was in charge of for more than four decades. He's a multimillionaire. His daughter's wealthy.
Doesn't he have a castle in Ireland, or is that fake news?
You know, I don't know. It could be. I know he goes to Palm Springs a lot. But he's a sneaky guy, and he controlled the process. He had an empire that took care of himself, his family, his friends, and now
And they're still being protected. Like Alderman Ed Burke's trial isn't going to be for what's...
Next November.
But how many years has it been? 4.5 years from the time that he was arrested until his trial starts. That's called favoritism because his wife, Ann Burke, is on the Illinois Supreme Court. And then Mike Madigan, where was his mugshot? Oh, because of COVID, they didn't take one?
No, it was post-COVID. He didn't have to do what they call the perp walk, which I did.
Everybody does it.
Yeah, except Madigan. He didn't have to do it.
Why?
Very good question.
God, I was waiting for that.
Very good question.
All right, real quickly, let's go to Jerry in Chicago. Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning. Good morning, Amy. Good morning, Governor.
Good morning,
Jerry. Good to hear your voice again.
Thanks, Jerry.
Okay. All right. Mark Levin, who is a constitutional scholar, read the article on his show. It is in black and white. The commander-in-chief has ultimate authority to declassify whatever he wants. So the second Trump left that White House with those documents, they were declassified. All of these former U.S. attorneys don't know what the hell they're talking about. And this McCarthy guy who says that Trump is going to be charged with a criminal offense, he doesn't know what the hell he's talking about either. When is somebody going to stick up for Donald Trump? When is somebody going to say it's in our Constitution?
Well, evidently Mark Levin did. And I'll be happy to join, you know, add my voice to sticking up for President Trump.
I mean, President Obama has 30 million documents here in Chicago stored somewhere in a safe location.
Right.
And he said he was going to scan them electronically and send them to the National Archives. He hasn't done anything. How long has he been out of office? I mean, come on. There's different rules for different people. And I bet every former president's like, oh, this isn't right. Don't you think?
Absolutely.
I mean, even Bush, they're all Clinton, they're all probably. Even Hillary, who had her own server, an unsecured server at her home in Chappaquiddick, New York, she's probably thinking, This is a complete witch hunt, but she probably wants the witch hunt.
She wants the witch hunt, and the other former presidents are feeling like they're not going to come to his defense because they're part of that club that's bipartisan. It's called the establishment, and they rule on the backs of we the people.
And it's a club that they didn't want him in to begin with.
Exactly.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So, I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630, and learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630, or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good Wednesday morning, Amy Jacobson here. Rob Blagojevich in for Dan Proft today. We're going to take your phone calls all morning long, 312-642-5600. If you're on hold, we will eventually get to you. And we're going to talk about Biden's about face that he had, because they went from defund the police to now we love police, fund the police. But first, you were, because you're doing cameos.
Yes.
And what request did you get the other day? We were talking during the break, and I find this fascinating.
So I got hired by a guy to send a message to his employer. CNA is where this guy worked, and he was leaving, and he wanted me to serve notice to his employer that he was leaving to take a job somewhere else. And he asked me to say nice things about his time there. He thanked them for giving him the opportunity, things that he learned. It was nothing personal, but, you know, he had an opportunity somewhere else that, frankly, well, paid more.
Oh, my goodness. So where were you when you make these cameos? Are you just – I do. Were you in front of the CNA building? Were you
– No. I do most of them out of my house, but when I'm traveling, I'll do it, you know, from on the road. You can do them anywhere.
That is fantastic.
Yeah. So he hired me for $100 to send the message to his employer that he was leaving to take another job.
How many do you do a day? Does it depend on?
It depends. But I've done nearly 3,000 of them.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. It's really remarkable, actually. And, you know, my prices are compared to some of the others. Like Mike Tyson charges $2,000 for a cameo. Brett Favre.
How much is he
charging? $500. In fairness to them. One guy has, you know, a heavyweight title.
Right.
And the other guy's got a Super Bowl ring. I don't have any of that, so I should be less than them.
What's some other fun ones that you've done?
Oh, I mean, look, a lot of them like me to mess around with some of their friends, you know.
Yeah, like, and yeah, poke at them.
Yeah, and of course, the request for me to say effing golden, but to say it the way I actually said it, I get that a lot.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Do you charge more for that one then?
No, I don't. It's the same. Yeah. Saying that F word comes naturally to me, although I try not to say it.
Well, I don't know if you heard the news yesterday. President Biden was in Wisconsin. He was in Pennsylvania, which he's going to go back tomorrow night too for a primetime address. We'll get to that later. Now they're all about funding the police. And wow, where did this come from?
You know, I call it the Safe for America's plan. And both your members of Congress voted for it. It's based on a simple notion. When it comes to public safety in this nation, the answer is not defund the police. It's fund the police.
Oh.
Fund the police. And give them, we expect them to do everything. We expect them to be, to protect us, to be psychologists, and to be sociologists. I mean, we expect you to do everything.
Did he say zoologist?
Everything. You realize more police officers are killed dealing with domestic violence
than anything else. You realize that? The point is, we ask so much of you, so much of you. I've not met a cop who likes a bad cop. There's bad in everything.
312-642-5600. Obviously, the question, why the about face? Midterms are coming around. People don't care about COVID anymore. They polled it. Americans, 2% of those polled care about COVID. So now they're back on to crime, right? Because every large Democratic city is having an escalation in crime, carjackings, you name it, you know, drifting, drag racing. And now they're changing their tune. Now they're all about helping the police.
There's no place in this country, no place for endangering the lives of law enforcement.
Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Here's another F word. Fake, fake, fake. When the police needed Biden, the Democrats, to protect, stand up for them during their difficult period after that Chauvin situation and George Floyd.
Yeah.
The Democrats were all over stomping on the police. They took the one bad cop and used it to basically indict all the police. And since then, the police have been on the run, and the Democrat politicians won't protect them. If Biden really cares about them, he ought to have their backs. And by the way, they control everything. Democrat Senate, Democrat House. Why don't they actually hire more police and send money to the cities?
Right.
So we can double our police force here in Chicago, because gangbangers outnumber cops in Chicago 75-1.
Well, part of the Safer America plan that he released yesterday, $13 billion to hire more police officers, okay. $3 billion to help courts clear backlogs, and a 13% increase to hire new investigators in the ATF's budget.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's going to make a difference?
Well,
I don't know how long it takes, you know, when you make these declarative statements that we're going to make everything safer. Okay. How long is it going to take for that money to get to Chicago for us to use it to hire more cops?
Notice the timing of it. They didn't
do
it before the summer when it gets really violent in big
cities.
The
summer of joy.
Yeah, they do it right after, before an election. And it's an election campaign promise that they may or may not fulfill. And I guarantee you there's all kinds of stuff in that bill that make it hard for Republicans to vote for, because they're using this as a political tool, so Republicans have to vote against it. It's not, I don't think, a serious effort to address crime at all. I think it's all fake, fake, fake.
And what he was talking about, he was talking to every Chicagoan. He was talking to you, he was talking about me, about how we should be living.
Everybody's entitled to be treated with dignity, just simple dignity. The fact is that they want to be able to go to good schools, in safe neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. A decent place to live.
That'd be nice.
And just a fair shot. Just a fair shot for their kids. You know, a peace of mind knowing your kids can go to school or the playground or the movies or the high school game and come home safely.
No.
Not have to think about it. But for too long, too many families haven't had that peace of mind. They watch the news and they see kids being gunned down in schools and on the streets.
Yeah.
Almost every single night you turn the news on, that's what you see.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer. Let's go to Brian in Chesterton, Indiana. Good morning.
Good morning, Amy. How you doing? Love your show. Blago, how you doing?
Hi, Brian. How you doing?
All right. How's it going? I was just calling in. It just amazes me every day that anyone votes Democrat anymore. They just get up there and lie, and these people believe them because they change their tune because here comes voting. It's crazy. I just can't believe people believe these guys.
Thanks, Brian. And in Chicago, I mean, Mayor Lightfoot, she hasn't gotten the memo yet, because yesterday she came out with this crazy, you ready for this? It's like a combination of COPA and CAPS. It's called the Community Commission for Public Safety and Accountability. Got that?
Yeah.
Okay, got it. That's CCPA, okay? And here's the interim chief to describe what it is. It reminds me of the Hunger Games. Listen to this.
Starting next year, district councils will be created in each of the city's 22 police districts. They'll be made up of three people in each district, elected in municipal elections in February. The district councils will have several key roles, and they include building stronger connections between the police and the community at the district level, holding monthly public meetings where residents can work with the police on local initiatives rooted in community concerns and priorities. They
got
can also raise and work
down?
To address concerns
Tell
about
me when
policing
you're bored.
In the district. And
I'm bored.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can I say something about
Please.
That? It's so transparently phony.
It's so
bad. I mean, first of all, why do they elect these people? Why not just appoint people to those communities now? because now it's happening every single day. People are getting shot up in the city of Chicago.
The every night. The weekends are now the weekdays. You remember, we would wait for the weekends to start tallying body, you know, the body count. And now it's during the week.
Right.
People are shot last night, too. It's every single night. And Mayor Lightfoot, she really, I mean, when she was describing what this commission's going to do, she doesn't back the police. She said, we have to decide whether or not the police are legitimate.
We have got to get more people in this city. A fundamental part of improving safety is having the people in the community believe that the police are legitimate forces for good. And that's a huge issue all over our
I mean, that is, she's not backing police with a statement like that. And what is she doing to protect the police? Because, you know, that's the question. What are you doing?
Of the Chicago Police Department.
But will this commission help with changing people's minds about
police? Well, I hope so. I think there's a long laundry list of issues that this commission needs to take on and starting to, I think, win back the public trust and legitimacy. But they will clearly...
To win back... They're saying we're doing this other commission to not support police, but the people rather than the officers.
Yes, and here again, this is a racist policy. I'll tell you why. 75% of the people killed in Chicago are black. Another 10, 15% are Latino. 5% are white. So people of color are the ones who are dying on the streets because of this violence, and she's forming commissions? How about doubling the police force and go after those gangbangers because they know where they are? And most of this crime are gangbangers. You know, they don't want to touch the gangbangers because of the political... Because they're afraid of the political pushback. There could be a terrible situation where somehow it'll enrage the black community, and then they'll have a political problem. So rather than do the right thing, you know, Pritzker went to Highland Park on the 4th of July with all those poor people that were killed there.
Yes.
He was so right in doing that. But you never see Pritzker on the south side of Chicago or the west side of Chicago where the black people live. And every single day that happens. And on the day on the 4th of July when the six people, was it six? In Highland Park that were killed?
Yes, or eight, I'm sorry.
Whatever that number was, more were killed on the south side that day.
Oh, I know, and he never goes.
He doesn't go there, because you know why? Because he figures, I'm not going to do the hard things necessary to keep those people safe, therefore I'm going to stay away, let Larry Lightfoot take the heat. These are cynical, fake politicians who don't want to solve problems.
Well, don't you feel, you sound like a Republican, because I'm a recovering Democrat. I used to, and I still, you know, I used to vote, some often for the candidate, not for the party, but I'm not even doing that. I will never vote for another Democrat as long as I live, unless they present a good argument why I should vote for them. But do you feel like your party's turned on you?
On me or on the people?
No, on the people.
Yes, very much so, of course. Public safety is the first duty of government. Social justice is good, but public safety first. The reason we have government is because we're protecting each other from predators and criminals who are strong and tough and are not constrained by any kind of moral considerations. That's why you have government. And because we have all this crime, the reason we have it, largely, is because the criminals and the gangbangers know that the police are not protected by the political leaders. And so they run wild. They have no respect for authority or for law. And they get away with murder, no pun intended. And you got the mayor and Kim Fox. Good Lord.
She should be in jail. She hit her husband. If her husband hit her, he would be in jail.
When I was a young prosecutor working under then Cook County State's Attorney Daly, who I saw yesterday, I'll tell you about that in a second.
Okay.
I never met him when he was my boss. He was way up on top, and I was like one of 800 prosecutors in the branch courts. I prosecuted domestic violence cases among the different places I went. And that would have been a classic case. Those kind of cases were in court every single day, unless you're the state's attorney of Cook County today.
And then you don't have to.
Then
do
you
it.
Don't get prosecuted.
Ugh. Let's go to the phone lines. Rich in Indian Head Park. You're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Amy. Good morning, Governor. How you doing today?
Good morning. I'm great. How you doing?
Good. What I wanted to say is this attack on the president for these documents. It seems like they're trying to tie this to January 6th to show a pattern of. How reckless he is. And the second thing is, as far as what's going on in the city, they have to crack down harder on these criminals. They can't just keep letting them go because they think it's a minor thing. And as far as the gangs go, they know who the gang members are. So every time something happens in the city, they should go... round up all these gang members and keep doing it until they cut down on this crime that's going on. Thanks, and have a good day.
Thank you. If you live in the city, you should run for mayor. We could use you.
I know.
Incidentally, I saw Mayor Daley yesterday.
Oh, yeah. What did you guys talk about? Did you ask him, what do you think's going on in the city?
I'll tell you, the first thing I said to him was, I said, hi, Mr. Mayor. Nice to see you again. Uh-huh. I wish you were mayor. I'm glad I'm not governor.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, when he was mayor, you know, we had crime issues, of course, when I was governor. But some of the stuff that happens, like in the downtown areas where these gangbangers used to come into the city, when he was mayor, the police had the authority to simply kick them out.
Right.
Get out of here. You can't be here. Go.
And we can't do that now.
No, it's political.
But why? Because?
Because it's a political powder keg, and the political leaders don't have the will to do it, nor do they even have the desire to do it. They would simply rather let the crime exist as it is, form fake commissions, have a governor that goes to Highland Park and not the South Side, and just let black people get killed.
And we have to remind people, 10 weeks from today is the election.
Yeah.
10 weeks. Yes. Didn't that just fly by?
Yeah.
So do something. What advice would you have for Darren Bailey at this point? Because I think that he's been playing or doing damage control rather than campaigning.
Right.
But now you can, you know, stop, reset, because they've found everything that they found on him, I think, is already out there on social media. Because when he talked about, you know, comparing abortions to Holocaust victims, dear Lord, that's from 5 years ago. So,
look,
but
I'm not going to. We all say stupid things. Look at me. This is effing gold. I'm not giving it up for nothing. Right.
Yeah.
Right. No, he has to make his case and be very aggressive. He should not be on the defensive. He's the challenger. He needs to run on the issues that are most important to people. He's got a tremendous issue here in the Chicagoland area called crime.
Right.
He ought to hammer crime, corruption on the Democrat side, the Madigan stuff, the politics as usual, and change. And I think he can be competitive. And I wouldn't at all dismiss his chances.
Are you going to vote for him? Oh, can you vote?
I could vote, yeah.
You can vote, okay. Sorry.
I could vote. I'm going to withhold what I'm going to say there because, frankly, I don't want to hurt anybody if I say I'm voting for somebody.
Yeah, but you don't like Pritzker, and he is a mean man.
He's
got a nasty side to him that people don't even know.
People
like, he was
know.
So rude to me, like just completely, as a human being, he was just rude and mean. So tell me a story about mean Pritzker.
We tend to think of Pritzker as kind of a big man because he's robust.
Yeah, the jolly old fat guy. Yeah.
Right. He's actually not that tall. He's actually on the short side.
Yeah, he is.
And he was in my office when I was governor. He used to work for me. I appointed him the director of the Human Rights Commission. And he came to my office with a woman, and it was right after Obama was beaten by Hillary in the New Hampshire primary.
Okay.
Obama had won Iowa, then he lost New Hampshire.
Right, I remember.
JB
well.
Was raising money for Hillary. He was the only figure in Illinois politics who was backing Hillary in the Democrat Party. The rest of us were with Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And after Hillary won New Hampshire, JB jumped the gun and felt like she was going to be the nominee. And he started telling me all these things they're going to do to Obama for having the chutzpah to challenge Hillary. His career's over. and was the side of him I never saw before. I saw him as sort of a jolly guy who liked to eat pastrami sandwiches. You know, like
and then also, when President Trump was going to release you,
yes,
he called Trump and told him no.
Yeah, you know, look, I get him for the politics saying, oh, they shouldn't let him out, blah, blah, blah. I can understand that, and I'm not going to blame him for that. I wish he wouldn't say it,
right. But
I get the politics.
Well, other politicians came forward and supported you.
They
you know,
did.
Jan Schakowsky,
great
I think
lady.
Dick Durbin.
Durbin was, at the end, he faltered.
Yeah.
When JB got out there publicly, Durbin changed his tune. But Pritzker went the extra mile and called President Trump not once but twice. And President Trump told me this himself, to press him to keep me in. Now, he has young children and I have young children. And I've been in prison at that point just about seven and a half years.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to get over that when a guy like that, who you've been good to, does something like that to your family. And if I ever see that guy, I'm going to kick his ass.
Are you? Yeah!
Anyway.
Or just make him do yoga, because we were talking about it. He should come to Core Power, because you can get a week for free, and we want to put him in the down dog position, then, you know, he's got to work out. But, yeah, that good for you. You'd have some words for him if you saw him.
Well, of course I would. Yes,
yeah.
Of course. I get the politics. It's the personal stuff when he has to go the extra mile to keep me in prison. He's on the Senate. He's on the FBI tapes asking me to make him a senator. And if I was, that's the guy who would buy it. He spent $170 million for governor. He could have had the Senate seat for $50 million if I was corrupt that way, which I never was.
Right.
But But the implication,
the implication, because we have the tapes. I mean,
yeah, the implication was if I make him senator, he'll raise a bunch of money for me.
Okay,
it was clearly inferred in the conversations. What a hypocrite!
People don't, I know, and then also too with the toilets, taking the toilets out to get a $342 tax break, then they paid it back.
Yeah,
but you still did the crime.
That's
the problem that bothers me. See, they went to Marie Pappas and wrote a show. You know, we're sorry.
Right.
You know.
Right.
MK did.
Yeah.
But they still did it.
Right.
They're corrupt. So corrupt. Chuck and Dullivan, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer. Are you still there, Chuck? Well, Chuck. Chuck has been holding for a long time.
Oh,
Chuck is
sorry,
there.
Chuck.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
All right, good morning. Amy Jacobson here. Sun's shining, beautiful Wednesday, nice summer day. Enjoy it while you can. I think tomorrow's already September 1st, if I'm not mistaken. Yes, it is. Can you believe that?
Wow.
And one after Labor Day. That's when, you know, the election really heats up. 10 weeks from today, or 10 weeks until the election.
Yeah.
And people got to get out there. And what could Darren Bailey do? Any recommendations real quick for him?
Just be aggressive. Make his case to the voters. Don't listen to the media. Don't listen to those who think the election's already over. Run your race. Listen, 74% of the American people think the country's going in the wrong direction. As a general rule, that means the party in power gets annihilated. So if I'm a Republican running against a Democrat and they're the party in power, you've got that going for you. But you got to go out and make your case.
All right. And making his case this morning on AM 560 is Dan Brady, Illinois State Rep for the 105th District and Secretary of State candidate. Good morning, Mr. Brady. How are you?
Good. Good morning, Amy. Good morning, Rod. How are you this morning?
Hi, Dan. Nice to talk to you.
Yeah. So what are you planning on doing when this remaining 10 weeks to get out the vote and to convince people to vote for you?
Well, similar to what's been said and what I've been doing. First off, what won me the Republican nomination was, quite frankly, going against the establishment and working hard, getting my message out there. I'm mismatched for resources financially. But I truly believe that the hard work side of things and connecting with the people across the state of Illinois, when you talk about things related to the Secretary of State's office, which is you know, yes, it's an elected office, obviously, but it's different from the standpoint of what people want is they want improved services. They want to be able to cut those wait times. They want to be able to get in and out, have a better experience when it comes to, obviously, vehicle-related driver services in particular. But that office touches so many Illinoisans' lives in a variety of different ways, but everyone thinks driver services. So how you're going to do better, what you're going to improve upon, and that's what I've been talking about throughout the campaign and, obviously, as we are now into the general election.
And you started out as a McLean County coroner. And how did that job prepare you for possibly being the Secretary of State?
Well, I think my broad base of experience, whether it's private business, service as you indicated as McLean County Coroner, and or as state representatives, prepared me well to serve as your next Secretary of State. And whether that issue is organ and tissue donation, who I worked with Secretary White on a number of initiatives, distracted driving for our teens, or senior driving education and training that I've had in legislation that is law. I've worked with that office. I've worked with, as I said, the secretary, and I've worked with other partnerships, law enforcement throughout the state of Illinois. Quite frankly, was very honored to receive the statewide Fraternal Order of Police State Lodge endorsement from law enforcement recently. And so all those areas, I believe, uniquely qualifies me with the background of knowing what the operations of the office does, not to mention my time as representative and dealing with the budgets and dealing with the legislation that operates the Secretary of State's office. But the Secretary of State's office, as I said, is not solely an office about policy. It's an office about public service. And that's where the direction is. And that's what people want to see change from the standpoint of increased services. And there's a lot of different ways that I've talked about doing that, technology upgrades, the digital investment that we need. And I have ideas that I've laid out across the state that have seemed to be well embraced, everything from partnering potentially with community colleges for services to looking at ways that we can improve, as the chief librarian, what our libraries are actually doing in the way of being hubs for services from the Secretary of State's office. And a lot of things, even down to e-titling, that Illinois needs to get on board about e-titling of services when it comes to your titles for trucks, new cars, vehicles, and getting those to the lien holders. You know, it takes what is now weeks, if not months, in Illinois, whereas about 24 other states do e-titling services and electronically have things done in hours. And so those are the type of initiatives that I've been talking about that we need to improve upon and make sure that we can bring the Secretary of State's office in the 21st century in those areas.
All right. So I have a friend who works at the DMV on Elston Street, and they're concerned that if a Republican wins becomes Secretary of State, that they're all going to lose their jobs. How many people across the state are employed by the Secretary of State, and is that a possibility?
Well, it's over 4,000 employees. In fact, it's one of the largest offices, not the largest office in the country, of the Secretary of State's division. And you know, the politics of the office is there, and if you want to talk about politics, the party that's in charge has played politics in that office for a number of years. Secretary White has been there. I certainly respect and work with him. He's done a good job. But the politics is behind the scenes, behind the big curtain of things. But you know what? I think anyone, Democrat or Republican, in the state legislature would tell you Dan Brady is an individual who tries to play by the rules, tries to play fair, tries to make sure and identify where we can find common ground, not what divides us. And in the Secretary of State's office, people don't care whether it's R or D. They want the party of efficiency. If you're a parent that has a son or daughter as a child on a waiting list for an organ donation, they don't care where that organ comes from, if it's a Republican or a Democrat.
True.
They just want to make sure the donor registry works and is up and going and can get that donation made as soon as possible with the help of the medical professionals. And so people losing their jobs, do your job, no matter what your political party is. And yes, you have the protection of certain things and unions. All those are important. But do your job for the people, and we can improve upon that to the taxpayers of Illinois. And under Dan Brady as Secretary of State, we will.
Rod, do you have any questions for him?
Do you
two know each other, by the way? I mean, there's so many Bradys all over.
Yes.
Yeah, no, Dan.
Absolutely.
Dan was a state representative and a state senator, right? State representative when I was governor, right, Dan?
That is correct. That is correct. And then you had, of course, Bill, who was state senator. And I've been the representative and continue to be in the Bloomington-Normal area. And certainly our time working throughout the state government, trials and tribulations. And, yeah, we're on different issues and different sides of things. But, again, I've been an individual who's tried to find that common ground and tried to move things forward in a positive way and leave the politics on the side.
I've shaked Dan Brady's hand a time or two. It's nice to talk to you again, Dan. Here's an observation. I don't know if this is the case now, but back when I was governor, I would cut budgets, and I was trying to save taxpayers' money and reorder the priorities of the state, and I would cut my own budget, and I would then cut the budgets of the Attorney General, Secretary of State, the Treasurer, Judy Bartopinga back then. They would all get angry.
Yeah.
They would talk a big game about sacrificing for the people, but they didn't want their budgets cut. And when I cut Jesse White's budget,
what did he do?
He
sent a tumblers out after you?
He got really angry because we discovered he had 17 carpenters on the payroll. Carpenters building chairs. They were making chairs within the Secretary of State's office out of wood so they could do something for the money that they were making. It was clearly a political payoff for the carpenters union.
Right.
And so when that got out, Jesse got very angry at me. He's a very nice man.
Oh, I love him.
He's a very nice man. But nobody criticizes him. I wasn't either. We just cut the budget. The story got out, and he said this. He said, what the governor just did is, quote, unquote, beyond the bounds of human decency. I'd say a little bit of an overreaction.
Yeah. So are you going to have any carpenters on the payroll, Dan
Keep an
Brady?
Eye on what are you going to do about those carpenters,
only,
Dan?
Yeah. Only if they're needed and we can justify what they're doing. You know, and we look at the budget, over $474 million approximately in the Secretary of State's budget. You know, we need to go back to prioritize where the services are going to be best utilized and where those dollars are going to be best utilized. And quite frankly, when you talk about things you can do internally, Just look at the facilities themselves. Let's talk about fully staffing those facilities and prioritizing those facilities with the individuals that we have, and what we can do about cross-training to make sure employees understand other operations of the facility they're in. So when someone comes in, you don't get told, I don't know, he or she isn't here. I don't know what they do. Come back. Those are the type of things that really grind at people and can be improved upon. And that doesn't necessarily take more dollars. What it takes is better prioritization, better understanding of the operations of where your budget dollars should be going, and what really connects with the general public in the way of providing services. All that needs to be looked at and obviously enhanced. But it doesn't mean you got to have more dollars in which to do it. You just got to have better planning, right, and a hands-on secretary who's going to make those decisions and be involved on a daily basis.
I mean, during COVID, the DMVs were an absolute nightmare. But now afterwards, now you set up appointment times. And I like that idea, and I think people like that. Are you going to keep that in place?
Appointment times have been improved, an improvement, I should say. You hear the situations to where people don't keep those times and that can back things up, but it's a step in the right direction. And I think also from a digital side of things, the investment that we're talking about before we look at, you know, $10.5 million roughly to about 96 facilities and leases across the state of Illinois. And some of these facilities are in dire needs of repair and technology investment. Before we do that, let's take a look at the 136 roughly campuses to touch through community colleges, nine of which in the suburbs alone in the Cook County area. Think what's already there with some of those facilities that taxpayers are paying for. Number one, they usually have space they'd like to look at, possibly talk about leasing. Number two, some of them serve as hubs already. Number three, the technology is there. It's built in already by the taxpayers. Imagine if that was there, what you could be moving forward with if that groundwork is already there. And the other is the word community. They all have public transportation to them. What better area in trying to, you know, throw good money after bad versus looking at something like facilities of community colleges across the state of being hubs and prioritizing where we have the greatest wait times, the lines, the problems, and look at what's nearby that's already there that's state-related somehow that we might be able to partner with and have a win for the taxpayer.
And Dan, did you what was your reaction when Alexi, or your competitor, Ali G, we'll call him, was doing a campaign ads in doctor's offices talking about women's right to choose? Because that has absolutely nothing to do with the Secretary of State's office.
No, it doesn't. And, you know, I obviously it's the politics of things. And so we're going to try and find things that divide us or scare people.
Ridiculous.
And we're going to confuse them with the fact of what the Secretary of State's office does or doesn't do, all over the fact of trying to get suburban moms to look into the race. And it doesn't have anything to do with it. You know, I certainly know that people waiting in line at the DMV don't care about your political affiliation. There's not a line that says pro-life, pro-choice, or if you're a Bears fan or a Packers fan or whatever, you get in this line or that line. It's about the services and making sure that they, you know, get their license or stickers with few hassles as possible. And they want the efficiency party. And that's what the Secretary's office can be under Dan Brady.
All right, Dan Brady, where can we find more information about your campaign?
Thank you for that, Amy. You can go to votedanbrady.com. That's votedanbrady.com. And I certainly appreciate the opportunity to visit with you and Rob this morning. Thank you.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Amy Jacobson here, and Rod Blagojevich, former governor, former congressman, sitting in today with us for Dan Proft, and thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and we're learning this morning, you know, another day, some more information about the raid on Mar-a-Lago. U.S. government documents claim that Trump's Mar-a-Lago residence, that the documents were concealed and removed from a storage room as part of the effort to obstruct the FBI's investigation of Trump's potential mishandling of classified information. With more on this, we're going to go straight to Kevin Brock, former assistant director of intelligence for the FBI and former principal deputy director of the National Counterterrorism Center. Good morning, Mr. Brock. How are you?
Good morning, Amy. How are you doing, Good. Rod? How are you?
Good morning.
Yeah, so how is all this information being leaked to the media? Or is this because of a filing? Or I don't know how this works. So help walk us through it, please.
Yeah, I was surprised to see this morning an actual photo of documents strewn on some carpet saying that these are samples of some of the classified documents that were found inside the residence. That apparently was attributed to some court filing that DOJ did. We know that filings are often used by DOJ and in fairness, even guys like John Durham to publicly put out information that they think is important to be known. As far as other leaks go, DOJ is well known as a major sieve and always has been, and they have their favorites in the press that they will feed information to. So this is not surprising. I would take all of this with a grain of salt at this point. Mm-hmm. Allegations that documents were removed or concealed or that type of thing maybe a little bit in the eye of the beholder based on those who are conducting the search and whether it was actually an overt act to try to obstruct some investigation. I don't think we could say at this point.
Well, then, did you read the Rolling Stone article that said the FBI seized documents with info about the French President Macron and his sex life? Or is that just something else we should take with a grain of salt?
I have to confess, I don't subscribe to Rolling Stone. Probably haven't seen it since I was in college.
Okay, but, good for you. Then you're a smarter man than me. But it's just, I mean, this is like spinning out of control. So let's start at the beginning. Why didn't they subpoena the documents and instead just go straight for the warrant?
Yeah, this is the million-dollar question. Of course, the attorney general maintained that this was an avenue of last recourse. I don't think anybody's buying that. It really doesn't pass the smile test. In the unredacted redacted affidavit that was unsealed last Friday, it doesn't indicate or doesn't say or indicate at all that there was a lack of cooperation with the president or his team. So why, in fact, is a search warrant being used of a private residence, a search of a private residence being used to obtain documents in dispute between a presidential administration and the National Archives? They basically, it looks like they ran out of patience, whether it wasn't meeting their time schedule or whatever. They decided they needed to get these documents and used kind of the cover story that, well, these were our sensitive documents and we've got to take control of them. There may be some legitimacy to that argument, but I maintain that using a search warrant, using criminal statutes to obtain a search warrant to get into the house to seize those documents was an abuse of the system. It was an overly intrusive government action on a private residence. And so I think in the end, that's what it is going to end up looking like. And to your point, Amy, this is something that was proceeding along behind the scenes negotiations. There's no reason why that shouldn't have continued. There's no indication in the redacted affidavit that there was fear of document destruction or that they were going to fall into the hands of inimical forces. None of that. It was an overreach.
So this is political in nature. Can you admit that? Because you had the midterms I know it's hard, you're a former FBI agent, but are you do you understand why trust is eroding between the public and the FBI?
Absolutely. And I've written on this. And this is something that, this is a calculus that leadership of the FBI and DOJ should have taken into account when they decided, hey, it's a good idea, I think we'll go execute a search warrant at a former president's house, not taking into consideration the impact that would have on at least half the country is at best a dereliction of their responsibility to take that kind of thing into account, and at worst, and may turn out to be a nakedly political move to try to take Trump off the chessboard for 2024. And that does erode trust, that perception, whether it can be mitigated by facts in the end or not, the perception exists, and that is something that DOJ and the FBI have to be sensitive to, because trust of the American people is their lifeblood. If they lose that, then they lose their effectiveness as an agency and the department.
I would say that FBI agents like yourself and your other colleagues, who I have to assume most of you are all honest, honorable people, the good guys, I think to save our country from these weaponized prosecutors who are destroying our democracy and can steal our freedoms is for the change to happen from people like you. And it's very refreshing to hear somebody like you coming out and speaking. I have to believe most professional FBI agents are appalled by the weaponization of some of these people for political reasons. It's not what it was intended, and it's not what most FBI agents are about, I have to believe. Am I wrong, or what do you think?
No, you're not. And you know, I don't have a formal polling mechanism, but I do talk to a lot of retired agents and agents that are still on duty. And my general sense is that the vast majority are aghast at all of this. And they understand the damage that it does to the FBI's credibility. To what end? Nobody would argue if there was something, serious federal violation that took place and there was evidence of that, of taking bribes or selling secrets or that type of thing. Have at it. But this is boiling down to what it appears to be is a document dispute. You know, who controls certain documents? These negotiations go on with all former presidents. What do they get to keep? What do they get to put in their library? What does National Archives take? All of these processes have unfolded for years under normal negotiations and discussions. The use of a criminal statutes to go in and search somebody's residence is over the top, and it's being seen that way, and it's damaging to the country right now.
And the fact that, you know, this morning they're releasing, and then some documents were moved from the storage area. Do the people really think that President Trump is reading nuclear codes in bed at night and sharing them with other people? Because he's obviously, I don't think that's happening. But Mr. Brock, do you think that he is going to be indicted?
No,
do you think the FBI's back is against the wall, where if they come up with nothing, that they might plant evidence against him? Because, you know, their reputation is definitely on the line here.
Well, Amy, I hope for heaven's sake that something that would never happen. I do disagree with Donald Trump asserting that agents planted information. That would be, I can understand his frustration,
right?
But that would be an unbelievable abuse of authority and power. So I resist that idea. However, I do think there is a need for to get back to your point. I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought. I do not believe that we will see an indictment out of this, and I don't believe that was ever actually the intent of all of this, because DOJ attorneys are not dumb. They're not going to be able to overcome the president's authority to classify and declassify documents. They're not going to be able to show, in all likelihood, any specific intent to do harm to the United States by possessing these documents. So, which are all elements of the statutes that they have to prove in court. So I think this search warrant was used for what it appears to be, and that is a forcing function to recover documents, and that would be an abuse of the search warrant and the Fourth Amendment, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you about, you know, the affidavit detailed what happened back in January. You know, they asked Trump to turn in documents, and he turned over 700 pages of government records from Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah.
And of those, how many were classified? How many labeled top secret? Or do you know?
There's a mix here that gets confusing. Mm-hmm. There are documents that fall into the bucket of presidential records. There are documents that fall into the bucket of government records. There are documents that are classified and unclassified. Each have their own rules and regulations regarding handling, access, authority, and that type of thing. The president has broad authority over all of those documents, and as I mentioned, it's going to be difficult to prove that he was not authorized to be in possession. But the government has a legitimate interest in what those documents are, where they're stored. Even if documents have been unclassified, they still contain sensitive information, making sure that that sensitive information is not going to be exposed in an inappropriate manner. So there are legitimate interests on both sides. But as I say, historically, these have been subject to negotiation, not search warrant.
And the president has the right to declassify documents, correct? I mean, that's his legal right.
He has the sole authority to do that. There is derivative authority extended down through the executive branch to certain people for declassification, but he is the ultimate classifier and declassifier, and all intelligence that's gathered by the intelligence community goes to serve one primary customer. That's the President of the United States. All of that intelligence that he is in possession of was collected to inform him in his duties as president. Now, is he president anymore? No, he's not. Did he declassify these documents? He said he did. So all of these are legal issues that make problems for an ultimate prosecution.
All right. He is Kevin Brock, former Assistant Director of Intelligence for the FBI and former Principal Deputy Director of the National Counterterrorism Center. You can read his columns at thehill.com. And Mr. Brock, thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thanks, Amy.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
All right, welcome back to Chicago's Morning Answer on this beautiful August 31st day. Plenty of sunshine. It's going to be warm, a high of 85. I can't wait. I'm going to seize the day and go out and enjoy the beach because now that the kids are at school, no one's at Chicago beaches.
Which one would
you
go to?
It's the perfect time. I switch off between Montrose and Foster.
Oh, nice.
I'm a Montrose person, but I also, because I'm a dog beach, because I have two bulldogs and they love to go swimming. Believe it or not, I put a jacket on them and throw the stick, and they'd be out there right now. They'd be out there the entire time if they could be.
So how long will you be at the beach?
I don't know. It just depends on if I can fall asleep, but if I can't, yeah, then I go back home. But it's fun with the dogs, and you're only supposed to keep the bulldogs out for 30 minutes, though, because they will they would run themselves to death if you didn't rein that in. Just a little bulldog knowledge there.
What are their names?
Bunky. Oh. And Bubba, Big Bubba Bear.
All right.
Bunky is named after a photographer at Channel 5 named Jerry Ungaro, but his nickname was Bunky. So Jerry Ungaro had a bulldog, so that's why I named my bulldog Bunky. And I called him and told him that. I said, this is, you know, a compliment, please, because I love Bunky to death, and I love my dog Bunky to death, too. So that's why I did it. All right. We have to welcome to our program, back to the program, our weekly Confab with Stephen Moore, noted economist and author of Trumponomics, also most recently of GovZilla, how the relentless growth of government is devouring our economy and our freedom. Stephen Moore, we didn't tell you who the guest host is today. We're letting you figure out. Now, just hearing from him, do you know who it is?
It's Michael Jordan.
No, it's not Michael Jordan. Guess, no, another guess. Who does that voice belong to?
I don't know. I have to hear him talk more.
Say something.
You want me to say something?
Yes.
This is effing cold, and I'm not giving it up for nothing.
I'm trying to think who that is. I'm not sure. Who's that?
Former Illinois Governor Rob Blagojevich.
Oh, awesome.
I know.
Sir, you are a hero of mine. You bought those big tax increases in Illinois. I love that.
Oh, thank you very much. And you know what? I really enjoyed watching you from prison. You were terrific. I'd watch on TV and agree with everything you said.
No, you did. You watched.
I did.
Yeah, you watched Fox News.
Yeah,
and
yep.
That's awesome. Well, it's great. It's an honor to be on the show with you, sir. And, you know, I just have to say, guys, I do a weekly radio show in New York on Saturdays on WABC. And, you know, for the last hour of the show, I just take callers, you know, because I like to hear what people are thinking. And I got to tell you, people are so, they're not just opposed to, they are so angry about this student loan debt, what do they call it, forgiveness program, where you're going to let the people who don't pay back their loans, you know, get a free pass. And the people who did feel like chumps, people like my wife. So this is really, I think it's totally backfired politically.
Oh, I think so, too. I mean, and people, even people that didn't take out loans, that the FAFSA website crashed the day that they announced this, even though it doesn't apply to people that are filing now. But come what? August 2024, right before the presidential election, I'm sure they'll do another big debt loan forgiveness. And that's why people are signing up, because it's tax free. Right, Stephen Moore?
Yeah. You know what they're calling? I just read a column today and they're calling it a jubilee. A jubilee. Hey, everybody's loan is forgiven. And here's the thing I would say about this, even for people who might think, well, this is okay, it's helping people who are struggling. And so there are a lot of people who are making six-figure salaries, Amy and Governor, and they are still not paying their loans. And that is outrageous. Now, here's the thing. I said this on Fox News the other day. If they go forward with this program, this is the death of the student loan program. It's the death of it. Who in the future would ever repay their student loan?
Yeah, because you won't have to. But also it gives universities the incentive to raise tuition.
Of course. Of course. So this is all part of a scheme that people like Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders have always wanted, which is, quote, free. And I'm using that word in quotations, free college, which means that the taxpayers are going to pay for it. And if you think college is expensive now, I mean, just stick around. Now, I've told you guys this before, but when I went to the University of Illinois and I graduated, I think around 1984-85, I was on the six-year program.
That's all right.
My final tuition was about $1,200 a semester or thereabouts. And now it's like $15,000 a semester.
That's crazy.
Governor, what happened? How did that happen? That they keep increasing their tuition three times the rate of inflation. It's the biggest scam in America.
You know, it's chock full of bureaucracy. They've got like 100 chancellors at the University of Illinois.
We do?
Yep.
Well, I'm not up to date on the recent numbers, but I remember trying to cut that down when I was governor.
Right.
And that establishment in those universities, it's a place, it's almost like the Democratic machine in Chicago, just placing people in jobs.
And only 54% of U of I students are from Illinois. That used to be in the 80 percentile. Other states, they want to keep their kids in the state.
You know where a lot of them are from?
Where?
China, right. China actually has one of the biggest. I mean, Illinois University of Illinois has one of the biggest Chinese population of students of any university in the country. But my point is, we're only rewarding these. If we do the student loan forgiveness, we're only rewarding. I think the university here. I'm a radical on this. I'd love your guys' thoughts on this. I just wrote a column on this. Rather than the taxpayers being on the hook, let's say somebody goes to Northwestern.
Yeah.
And they graduate with a $75,000 worth of debt, just picking out a number, and they don't repay that loan. Why should the taxpayer have to pay that back? You know where the money should come from? Northwestern has, what is it, like a $6 billion endowment. Why not take the money out of the endowment? Why don't they take money out of their endowment and reduce their tuition so it's affordable for the average person?
Exactly.
And endowments are, I mean, Purdue has a I think it's $6.9 billion.
Billion.
Yeah. And that's nothing compared to Stanford and other places.
Now, that's an example where you actually have a school president there in Mitch Daniels, who's actually he's frozen the tuition, you know, while he's been the president. So, you know, kudos to him. That's not happening at University of Illinois. It's not happening at DePaul. It's not happening at Loyola. It's not happening at, you know, Northern Illinois. All those schools up and up and up and up and up. And nobody in the middle class. But think about this, Amy. You got two. Let's say you got two kids that are, you know, 19 and 18. You got two kids in college. How can you afford $60,000 a year per student?
You can't.
In college costs. I mean, it's bankrupting our families. So let's put the universities on the hook, right, Governor, for this debt.
You know what? I don't want to get back into politics, but you're motivating me to run for governor again. Because if I am, I'll do exactly that. We'll put a cap on tuition.
Yeah.
And squeeze those universities and that bloated bureaucracy there. Chancellors and vice chancellors. There's more chancellors and vice chancellors than students.
I know. It's ridiculous.
It's outrageous. And then the kids are getting degrees in ethnic studies and basket weaving and, you know,
underwater basket weaving.
And then they can't get a job, you know. So this would incentivize the schools to make sure they're actually teaching the kids something that is of value, that's a marketable skill. And by the way, a lot of these kids actually have graduate degrees. Did you know that? They have graduate degrees, yeah, and they're not paying their student loans.
Oh, my God. All right, let's move over to the Inflation Reduction Act, which has nothing to do with inflation. It's not getting any better, Stephen Moore, at the grocery store. Normally, they have these pre-cooked meals at Mariano's, which have always been $9.99. Always. They're $11.99, just like that. Because I've been to the grocery store three times this week because I keep forgetting things because, you know, I don't have four people at home. Now I have three, so I'm adjusting to, you know, the new level of food I need to buy. But it's getting worse, not better.
Yeah, and so if I think I can do the math there. If something was $99.99 and now it's $11.99, that's a 20% increase in food costs. And so you have seen a reduction by about a dollar a gallon in gasoline. Although watch out for this fall and winter, the utility costs are going to go way, way up. I don't know if you've seen what's happening in Britain because they went in all in with all this green energy stuff. Their utility costs are going almost doubling, and they're talking about 22% recorded inflation in Britain. The reason I bring that up is Biden is following the same cockamamie energy policy that Britain did, that Germany did, yep, that France did, all these countries that are totally dependent on Russia. That's not a very dependable source of oil. So we got to get back to producing American oil and gas and bring prices down, because I agree with you. We're not done with inflation by any means.
I wholeheartedly agree. Amy is signaling to me. I wholeheartedly
It's awful. Do you go grocery shopping, Rod? Be honest. If you don't,
I'll be happy to be honest. No. And but I want to because I don't go because I've been so starved from those things for so long that if I go down the shelves, I'll buy everything.
Oh.
It'll all look real good to me, right?
Right, because food items you haven't seen in forever.
Right. But about the gas prices, Stephen, my observation as a Democratic governor, and at the time was the fifth largest state in America, who had a lot of staff, and I had these smart policy people who went to the John F. Kennedy School of Government. I could never get into that school, but they worked for me, right? It's a classic case of the A student working for the C student, right? But they're bleeding heart liberals who are hard-hearted. They have no real life experience, and so they really want high gas prices because they don't want people to drive, and they want them to drive less. Am I right about this?
Exactly. You're 100% correct.
Yeah.
In fact, you know why the gas price is down a dollar a gallon?
Why?
Guess.
I don't know. Why?
People are driving less because they can't afford to pay $6 a gallon.
Oh,
so people cut that. It's
they
exactly
didn't take those summer vacations. Yep.
Yeah, so people cut back on that because it's not like, hooray, we got more oil and gas. No, we have the same amount. And by the way, you guys know where we're getting the oil and gas from, our strategic reserve, which is going to soon run on empty if we keep doing this.
Right.
And so you've got people driving less. And I agree with you. They hate the car. And by the way, did you see that California and Washington State and Oregon and Massachusetts are banning the purchase of cars after 2035. Everyone is going to have to buy an electric vehicle.
Whether you freedom want it of or choice.
Not, whether you want it or not, you got to buy an electric vehicle. That is, and by the way, I hope Illinois, because you're a blue state and you're in the camp with those, I hope you don't do the same stupid thing as well. People, you know what percentage of new cars today that are bought are electric vehicles?
I don't know.
About 4.5%.
4.5%? Okay.
So that means, if my math is right, that means like 95.5% of people are buying cars they want, which is not electric vehicles. By the way, how are you gonna use an electric vehicle in Chicago when it's 10 degrees below zero? You think those batteries are going to work?
No, there's no way. And they better get on these charging stations, too, because I told you last time I was in California, there was a line at a charging station.
Yeah.
There wasn't. Right. I'm like, okay, good luck with that.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah, well, people, you know what's happening? People, you know, you're going to have Michigan Avenue is going to be, you know, cluttered with cars that are running out of juice in their batteries. Mm-hmm. And stuck there in the middle of the road. So this is a scheme to get people out of their cars. They want everybody on trains, everybody on transit systems, except for the high and mighty. You know, they will have their own cars and jets. And the rest of us will be packed into truck and transportation that is either a bus or a one of those stupid rail systems.
Yep.
And so Americans, we have a love of, and don't you love that it's California that's where the word hot rod came from? right? I know. California. They're not going to allow.
And you lived in California because you went to Pepperdine.
I did.
Law school.
I did. I was in law school at Pepperdine, where I wasn't exactly setting the world on fire. I was a gentleman C scholar. I barely survived, but I got through and passed the bar exam the second time around.
Oh, you did? Or at least
you
passed it.
I wasn't learning anything in law. I was learning about life out in California. That was Hollywood.
Right.
You know, Malibu and movie stars.
Oh, it's a beautiful campus. Ooh. It's unbelievable.
Rod, I don't run out of time. Can I just want your one minute. How is it that it came about that Donald Trump gave you that pardon? How did that come about?
The hand of God, and it's an unlikely convergence of events, but when I was in the middle of my troubles, and by the way, I didn't break a law, cross the line, or take a penny, I was fighting back. He saw me do it.
Right.
He invited me on Celebrity Apprentice. Imagine that. And then he fired me. God bless him. He was right to do it. Who'd have thought years later he'd be freeing me?
Right.
So Trump's the only president in American history to have fired and freed the same guy. Even Lincoln didn't do that.
Yeah, it speaks a lot. You know, there is a soft side and a humanitarian side of Donald Trump that a lot of Americans who've never met him.
Yep.
Yes,
so,
say that, Stephen. He's like a very kind-hearted man if you get to see that side of him. That's absolutely right.
Yep.
And have you talked to him since the raid? Because
I've talked to him a couple of times. I have to tell you. Oh, you mean since the raid?
Yes.
No, I'm not. But I got to tell you, I mean, liberals are the stupidest people on the planet. Have basically now turned Donald Trump into a victim. That is the most outrageous abuse of power I've seen in my 35 years in Washington. Whether you like Donald Trump or not, can you imagine if Donald Trump had done a raid on Barack Obama's home?
Oh my God, please. Well, nice. Barack Obama still has 30 million
exactly.
documents in a storage area somewhere in Chicago that the National Archives said, okay, that's okay for you to do it. But, you know, he's supposed to scan those documents and turn them in, and he has not done that yet. So he might want to get on that. But all right, Stephen Moore, we're going to have to leave it there. Always a pleasure. Stephen Moore, noted economist and author of Trumponomics. All right, thanks, you too. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Football is back, and we here at WIND Chicago are the home of your Huskies. And with that, we welcome back to the program Sean Frazier. He is the Associate Vice President and Director of Athletics at Northern Illinois University. Season opener is, you ready? Tomorrow, Thursday, September 1st, at home against Eastern Illinois. My sister went there. I love Eastern.
Yeah.
You've been down there to Eastern, right?
I have.
As the former governor, I'm sure you've been to Eastern, Western, Northern, Southern, all of them.
Yes, I have.
But we like Northern the best, right? Because we're home of the Huskies here.
It's a great school. A lot of kids from Chicago go there.
Yep.
They take care of people. And I was there in February of 2008 when we had a terrible shooting.
Oh, yes. I remember that. That was awful.
Yeah.
But the good news is that football is tomorrow, September 1st, right here. You can hear it here on WIND, the pregame starting at 6:30, and the kickoff is at 7 p.m. And let's welcome what we can expect for the season. Let's welcome back to the program Sean Frazier. Hello. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thanks, guys, for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, so what can we expect in this first home opener against Eastern Illinois?
You know, I mean, I would tell you that, you know, we're coming off a MAC championship, and, you know, our kids, our coaching staff, our university is really focused to continue in that same vein. You know, the expectations are winning championships, doing it academically and athletically, and this season doesn't change that at all for us. You know, we've got some unfinished business. We lost in our bowl game. We've got a real, real aggressive stance to make sure that we can do what we do and get out there and win championships. So that's probably the best sidestep I can do to say that we have expectations.
And when you win the MAC, it's great for recruiting. That helps a lot, don't you think?
Absolutely. You know, when you win on anything, academically and athletically, people want to be involved. People want to be around winners. And we've been able to do that in the state of Illinois. You know, we have the best win percentage in the state, both FBS schools and FCS schools. So we have some things to protect on our reputation, no question about it.
Well, you also produce NFL players. Kenny Golladay went to NIU,
oh,
right?
That's...
Doug Free of the Cowboys, Sam Hurd of the Cowboys. And you're playing a team that Eastern Illinois that Tony Romo played quarterback at, right?
Yep, and Garoppolo as well. Don't forget about
him.
That's
right.
Garoppolo
Jimmy G, as well. He's from Rolling Meadows.
Isn't that something?
I used to see him in high school. Right. Yeah. When,
did you?
Yeah, because I had friends that had kids on the team, and we'd watch, and we knew he was going to go places.
Yeah, and he wins games.
Nope.
And he's
no
got
question.
A new contract, didn't he, Sean?
He sure Jimmy did. G. They kept him at the 49ers. Yes, he did. So the competition in the great state of Illinois is what it is, and that's why it's good to have a great in-state rival, Eastern Illinois, and we play all of these schools that we can, that want to play us anyway, here in the state of Illinois. So this is a good matchup, good start off to the season.
When you play a Big Ten team, do you get what are the proceeds you get at the door from ticket sales? Because this weekend, Iowa is playing South Dakota State, the Jackrabbits. My cousin goes there, so we're having a family reunion because I'm an Iowa Hawkeye, so we're all going to that.
Good.
But that's really important for those smaller schools to play Big Ten teams.
Yeah, it is. It all changes. You know, it depends on the guarantee from the institution. Obviously, ticket sales folks are familiar with Big Ten. We're nested in Big Ten country. So, you know, by playing Big Ten schools, it really helps out from a competition standpoint. We've had a fair amount of success against Big Ten schools as well. So it's a great chance for everyone to come together that are from different schools, and our gate reflects that. So I don't have a number off the top of my head, but it definitely increases substantially.
Now, anything to get fans in the stands there at DeKalb for the games? Because I remember years ago. Didn't you have some ticket giveaway? Or I can't remember what it was. Can you remind us or me?
Yeah, no. We give away giveaways. Like, good example, first 1,000 fans will get a drawstring bag, you know, from First State Bank, right? So things like that. We do little giveaways for that. Obviously, food and beverage offerings and different things. But for this one, this particular home opener, the first 3,000 fans that show up will get this nice monogrammed NIU drawstring bag. So things like that. Every game, there's a giveaway or something to that effect. But again, just watching our Huskies come in and being able to see the championship culture, you know, that's going to be it's going to be a beautiful day. I'm guaranteeing that to all our listeners. It will be a beautiful day, okay? So come on out. Enjoy the games at 7 o'clock. Do some tailgating. It's the Thursday before Labor Day, so you know there's going to be a wind down. Mm-hmm. I'll give you permission to go into your boss and tell them, hey, you know, I got to go see the Huskies. And you know what? Thank you very much for giving me this time off. How about that? I'll give you a pass for that.
A time off for that. All right, so who's your quarterback this year and your star players?
Yeah, I'm not going to give you star players. I'm going to give you my quarterback.
Okay.
They're all star players.
I knew you were going to say that. Okay.
You ought to run for governor.
I coach, so I understand.
Yeah, no, I'm not running for governor. I'm out of politics.
You sound like one.
Wait, what do you mean you're out of politics? Were you in politics?
No, I was never in politics. That was a mistake. Sorry.
No, you're too smart for politics. But tell us about your quarterback. Sean, tell us about your quarterback.
Yep. So Rocky Lombardi, that's his name.
Good name.
That's a great name. That is the best name for a quarterback, Rocky Lombardi.
Yes. He's an Iowa kid. We did recruit him first off. He ended up not coming here initially and went to Michigan State and transferred in last year. And he's just outstanding human being.
What year is he in?
A great leader. He's a senior, and this is his last year of eligibility.
Okay.
But he's obviously he's a MAC champion already, right? He took a championship along with our 85 freshmen that we had last year.
Ooh, that's
no longer freshmen.
Awesome.
Yep. So he's outstanding, and we're looking for big things. He's gotten better and better, and he's a defensive nightmare for folks that are trying to defend him. He's really good. Yes.
Can he run?
Oh yeah, he can. He can run. He can pass. He can do it all. He's a 6'4", 220.
Wow.
I might be putting more weight on him, but he's
he doesn't like that.
Definitely an imposing.
So he may be NFL worthy. We may have a Northern Illinois University quarterback in the NFL like we have Eastern Illinois University quarterbacks.
Absolutely. There's no question about it that he has the next level ability, and we'll definitely see that this year for sure.
Wow. Who's going to be your biggest competition, do you think, when you look at your schedule?
You know, they're all tough. You know, we play a competitive schedule. So we've got Eastern Illinois, and then this is all the non-con. Then we've got Tulsa.
Oh, that's Tulsa. That's a good school normally.
Yep, it's a good school. And then we have Vanderbilt from the SEC at home at our place.
Okay.
And then we go on the road to Kentucky, University of Kentucky in Lexington. That's going to be a tough game.
Ball State, not right so in, tough? Or
no, they're all tough now. You know, okay. our side of the division is the West side, the MAC West. And we've got Ball State, Toledo, Eastern Michigan, Ohio, Central Michigan, Western Michigan, Miami. And we finish up with Akron. So it's a gauntlet, right?
Yeah.
But if we win, we do what we need to do, and we are straight champions. So it's going to be tough. All the games are going to be tough. They're going to be very competitive, but we're going to be ready for them.
There's and no I know question. We have a lot of NIU fans out there and a lot of alum. And, again, you can listen to the games here on AM 560, starting with the season opener, which will be tomorrow, September 1st. I can't believe it's September 1st already. Where did the time go?
Yeah.
Pre-game starting at 6:30 and kickoff is at 7 p.m. Are you going to be part of the pre-game show? Or are you focused on other things on game day?
No. I have a – it might be pre-tape, but it might be live, so I don't remember. Please, I've had a lot of concussions, so please give me a little strength as a former student-athlete. So if I'm not as bright in the bulb this morning, please apologize. But I do believe I am
fine.
A part of the pregame.
Yeah, and where did you play football?
University of Alabama.
Oh, that's
Wow.
Are you from Chicago area?
I am not, but we've been in the Chicago area for over a decade now. So, no, I'm from New York City originally, and then my family is from the great state of Alabama.
Was Nick Saban your coach?
No, that's I'm quite a bit older in that era, yes.
Well, but you're a lot younger than Bear Bryant being your coach.
That is correct. I'm in the middle. Put it that way.
So who is your coach? All right, so who's your coach at Alabama?
So I had a few of them. Bill Curry would be one, and then a guy by the name of Gene Stallings.
I remember.
Would be another.
Played for the Cardinals, the then St. Louis Cardinals.
Yes. Wow. That's correct.
Yeah. Yeah, we sound like a bunch of old men right now.
Honest.
I'm not a guy. I sound old.
No.
What position did you play, Sean?
It's what?
Position did you play?
A strong safety and fullback, a running back position.
Good.
So I got switched from offense to defense.
Oh my God! Yeah, my son plays football, and it's he's a kicker. So how's your kicking situation going? Looking for anybody?
We always are looking for someone.
Well, he got CPS second team last year. Whitney Young guy got first because he scored a 52-yarder. But my son was 33 for 33. So
wow!
Oh, I like
we'll
that.
See.
I like that. Yeah, come to camp.
Okay.
Come to our camp. We love it. I can't recruit you, but I will tell you to come to camp.
Yes.
How about that?
Okay, cool. All right, Sean Frazier, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. And again, the game is tomorrow night on right here, and we're home of the Huskies, WIND, pregame 6:30, kickoff at 7 p.m. Good luck to you, not only for tomorrow night, for the entire season.
I really appreciate your support, guys. I really appreciate having me on, and I look forward to seeing you. Go Huskies.
All right. Sean Frazier, Associate Vice President and Director of Athletics at Northern Illinois University. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to podcasts of Dan and Amy from the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
There's jumping the gun there. Ask Rod, ask the former governor of Illinois, any questions you have. Don't keep emailing me or texting me. By the way, love having you here, and a lot of our listeners love it too. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. Always wondered how you would have handled the COVID situation compared to what Governor Pritzker is doing. Governor Pritzker, by the way, signed the 33rd declaration of emergency for the state of Illinois, by the way. And we've still, you know, life is going on. We're still at school. I don't know what the emergency is.
Right.
So
it's no emergency. It's a political issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's another one of the lies that we're being told by people in high places.
So what would you have done differently if you were governor during COVID?
In the very beginning, when it first happened, and we didn't know a lot about it, I would have, like Pritzker, shut things down, the businesses, the bars, the restaurants, the public places. And that happened on a Sunday. I remember this. I just came home. I would have done that. I would have, unlike Pritzker, I would have shut the polls down 2 days later. He chose to keep those open, with long lines of people, because the Democratic National Committee told him, we want Biden to finish off Bernie Sanders. Let's get this done on that big Super Tuesday, whatever that day was.
Yeah, and there's also, like, he wanted to protect Kim Fox and other people. So that had to happen. I remember being scrunched in at Wells Park with a bunch of people and thinking, well, if this isn't a super spreader event, I don't know what is.
Right, which so it tells us two things. One, it was not that serious if he thinks those polls can be closed, stay open, or that he didn't care about human life, that elections and politics is more important than protecting the public health. I would have ended the shutdowns within a few months.
Yeah,
and
like most governors did, except for ours, and California's, and New York's, and New Jersey's, So yeah, it was obvious what was going on.
And there's a talking points that they get from the Democratic National Committee in Washington. And so they follow the same playbook, and they're all part of the same team. It's a political thing.
Wow. 312-642-5600 turnkey.pro answer line. Ask Rod anything. Let's go to Mike on I-55, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yes, good morning. Other than knowing you were going to get out of jail, what was, like, the happiest moments of your jail time? Like, what brought you joy? Probably not a lot of things, but what brought you joy when you were in jail?
Great question, Mike.
No, I must tell you, Mike, nothing. There was no joy. It was 2,896 days of joylessness.
But what about, because you taught, remember, didn't you teach a class?
Yeah, I didn't get joy out of that. I mean, I just did it.
Really? Yeah. What about running? Because wouldn't they let you run?
Yeah, they didn't. Thank goodness. It was very helpful to be able to work on physical fitness every day and read books and things like that. But I can't say it brought me joy.
Yeah.
Maybe a certain amount of contentment or satisfaction because you're being constructive with your time. But no, Mike, the moment that I learned that I was actually finally going home, that was exhilarating. That was joyful.
Where were you when you heard the news?
So it happened right around 11 o'clock Mountain Time. And like I always heard when it came to my appeals and how our hopes were constantly dashed, I'd hear it on the news before I could hear it from anybody like my lawyers or my wife. I would hear it on the news. And generally inmates would come to me and say, hey, Gub, we just saw you on TV. And this particular time, one inmate came up to me and said, hey, Gub, you were just on TV, Trump's going to send you home. And over the years, I learned that some of these guys, as well-intentioned as they may have been, would misinterpret or misunderstand what they saw on the news when it came to me.
Right.
And so I said, where did you hear it? I pressed him, and he heard it on the local Fox affiliate in Denver. And then I walked into a room that has a TV to see what was on, and another inmate said the same thing to me. And I remember actually, you're not really supposed to put your hands on another inmate.
Right.
I had a friendly relation with him. I put him against the wall. Tell me exactly what you heard. Okay? MF-er.
And I want to know now.
Yeah, come on. Tell me exactly what you heard.
Wow.
And what he said made sense. And then within moments, the national Fox News covered it at 11 o'clock, top of the hour. And Trump was at Andrews Air Force Base. And I watched him.
Oh, you watched him say that he was going to pardon?
I watched him say that I was
going
to
commute your sentence, pardon. What was it?
Commuted the sentence.
Commute your sentence. Yeah. Wow. All right. Thanks, Mike, for the phone.
Thanks, Mike.
And then how long after you learned did you actually get out?
So that was 11 o'clock. I probably exited the prison maybe around 6.
That same day?
Yeah, that same day.
Wow.
Yeah, you pack your stuff up real fast.
Well, did you have stuff to pack up?
A lot of books.
Oh, okay.
A lot of books. Boxes of books.
Now, did people help you take the boxes out? Did they help you carry the stuff out?
Yes. I met a lot of good guys there. Most of them criminals, overwhelming number of criminals.
Well, yeah, that's why they're in prison.
There were some that weren't, though, right?
Okay.
Yeah, but there were. Most of them were, but not altogether bad guys. I mean, there's good and bad in everything, including among convicted criminals.
Okay. Chuck in Delavan, Wisconsin, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
I can't believe I got through. Hey, I got somebody on my campaign committee. I'm going after that District 1 spot up here in Wisconsin, Rob, where Paul Ryan used to be the congressman. I got my own party. It's called the Going Away Party. I got a guy that's helping me. His name's Walter Kozabowski. I don't know if you remember him or not.
Yeah, Chicago City Clerk.
You know him?
Right. He's helping me with – he lives down in Illinois, but I'm up here in Wisconsin. And he's advising me on how to go ahead and get all these extra votes. He said if it was all any way possible that you could get Donald Trump to endorse me, he says, then we can get it. We'll seal the deal. And I'm sorry, Amy, I lied to you when I said that Donald Trump was supposed to endorse me before his
wife's panty drawer was being, robbed of their nuclear secrets. So anyway, could you help me out and rob and call up Donald Trump and get me endorsed for the going away party?
I don't know about that.
It's kind of, I don't want to make a promise I can't keep, Chuck. I don't exactly have his phone number. So it's not, I've seen him and I'm grateful to him, of course, and I don't know how, I wouldn't know how to call him.
Yes, it's all right. Thanks, Chuck. Appreciate
but
it.
Good, go ahead, Chuck, real quick. All politics is local, Chuck. Get out there and talk to the voters and persuade them to be for you.
That's good. All right, John in Bridgeport. Very well said. John in Bridgeport, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, guys. I just have a difference of opinion with you regarding Ricketts and the Cubs with that soundbite. If I was Ricketts, I would have went to Rosemont, who wanted me more than what Tony made it sound like. But anyway, Rod, when you got jammed up there, you thought, or we all thought, that if they would continue a further investigation, bigger fish would have fried. Do you agree with that?
Well, John, they wanted me to talk about people when they first arrested me. And they said to me, you're not a bad guy. We listen to all these tapes. You're just a product of Chicago politics. And, my interpretation of that was they wanted me to talk about Obama. I think they wanted me to say that if I was so-called selling the Senate seat, which I wasn't, he was buying it. And what he did was send someone to me to make a political deal. Neither one of us did anything wrong. But, no, I think that they were interested in that. When they come after you like that, they don't want you to help them with the guy who's beneath, in a lower position than you. They want to always work their way higher. And when you're the governor, there's really nobody higher except the president. And so my interpretation was they wanted me to cooperate against Obama on something that was not criminal on either his part or mine. And eventually the sale of the Senate seat was reversed. It was never a crime from the very beginning. It was among the big lies they told about me and the big lies they're telling about Trump.
Thanks, John, for the phone call. Did Rahm Emanuel ever want your Senate seat?
Rahm Emanuel is all over the FBI tapes. He uses the F word way more than me.
I'm familiar with
his work. We talked about
a
lot of political stuff and political deals. All of those were legitimate and legal.
Okay. So there's nothing that would get Rahm Emanuel.
They'd be embarrassing conversations.
And Obama wanted Valerie Jarrett, right?
According to sworn testimony by the union boss, Tom Balanoff, in two trials, Obama sent Balanoff to me to talk about Valerie Jarrett and see what I wanted. And that's what started the whole thing and landed my ass in prison. And Obama to the White House and me to the big house. How
and
funny
Jesse
life is.
Jesse Jackson Jr. wanted it too, right?
Jesse Jackson Jr. wanted it. Everybody wanted it. Just about everybody wanted it. Jesse Jackson Jr. was among the more aggressive pursuing it.
And Governor Pritzker wanted it.
Governor Pritzker called me, asked me to make him senator, and inferred and implied that there was a lot of campaign money there if I would do it. But that's not illegal if it's an inferred and implied. If he actually made a quid pro quo, that would have been illegal. He didn't do that.
All right. Kip, you're in Stillman Valley. You're on Chicago's Morning Answer. What's your question for Rod?
Well, hey, Rod and Amy, thanks for taking my call. Listen, it's hard for me to put this into a question form, but I'm going to kind of lay it out there. Before Barack Obama was senator, did you see the hand of the Democratic National Committee through Perkins Coie or whatever in all the shenanigans that they do during elections? And while the Democrats are in high power on the dirtiness, like what they did to Ryan during the Senate, election to get Obama to be senator of Illinois, and how they're using that office and that law firm to this day. And thank you. I'll listen to your comments.
Thank you. What was your name again, sir?
It's Kip.
Kip.
Yep.
Kip, Perkins and Coie's a big-time Democratic law firm out in Washington, D.C., represented Hillary Clinton. I don't know whether they represented Obama or not. They probably did. They represented me. They did work for me, handled my campaign finance stuff. Do I see the hand of Perkins Coie involved in some of the things related to what you just referenced, like Ryan, who was the potential Republican candidate against Obama in 2004 and could possibly have beaten Obama, and then he got caught up with the stuff what he and his wife were doing when they were going to sex parties or something. Do you remember this?
Yes.
And he quit and got out of the race.
Yes.
It's very
possible. Because they got his divorce unsealed.
They got the Blair Hull's divorce unsealed.
Right.
And so that sort of stuff that they do behind the scenes that the average citizen can't do, that they do, I don't have direct evidence Perkins and Coie had their hands in it, but I know what happened.
Okay. A real quick shakedown of Children's Memorial Hospital. Or, sorry, it was, back then it was Children's Memorial. So
Children's Memorial Hospital. That's very meaningful to me in my personal life. I lost my cousin Eli there when he was 12 years old to leukemia, and I was 10. He was like a brother to me. When I became a congressman, I did everything that hospital asked me to do because I loved that hospital. When I was governor, same thing. I was cutting the budget by $2 billion. Dusty Baker had called me up, the former Cubs manager, because he was on the board over there. They knew I was a big Cub fan. See if we can get the governor to get us $8 million because we've been trying to get this money for 8 years. We can't get it from the legislature. I said I would do it. I did it. They got $8 million. A few days after, I told them they were going to get the money. My brother called them and asked them if they could do a fundraiser for me. That's all. The prosecutor tells the jury, when my brother made that ask, that was the shakedown. And that is a lie. It isn't true. That is not the law. If there was a quid pro quo where my brother were to say, if you want that $8 million, do a fundraiser, that would have been a crime. But we knew where the line was. No one did anything like that. And incidentally, at the same time that my brother made that request, which the guy by the name of Petra Magoon never said yes to, and then never called him back, and that was the end of it. And by the way, they got the $8 million. We got no fundraiser. He was hosting a fundraiser for then-Senate President John Cullerton at the very same time. So when there's fundraising, it's a legal request protected by the Supreme Court as a First Amendment right to ask for campaign contributions. It is only a crime of bribery if there's an express quid pro quo, one for the other. Either you promise something or threaten something. There was no evidence of that. The prosecutor and the jury instructions lied to the jury when he said the ask was a shakedown. No shakedown. One last thing. Winston Churchill said a lie could travel halfway around the world before the truth gets a chance to put its pants on. I'm still trying to pull my pants up from these lies, from these MFers.
Well, they took things and took them out of context.
Took them out of context and just flat out lie.
Matthew in Avon, Illinois, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I've got a question for Rod. Rod, if you were to run again, what party would you run as, and do you see yourself running again for public office?
Thank you, Matthew. My wife has made it abundantly clear that if I run for public office again, I'm doing that with my second wife.
Oh,
and I really love Patty, and she's been a devoted and a loving mother and wife. And
she stuck by you the whole time you were in prison.
She defied all the odds. The biggest odds makers had it 9-1 a couple of days after I was arrested that she was going to leave. They took odds on this.
Are you kidding me?
No. They took odds on this. And I know as a matter of...
That is sick.
...of statistical fact, if a man's in prison for 4 years or more, there's a better than 90% chance that she doesn't stick around. So the odds of me running, Matthew, are highly unlikely. I'd have to persuade her first to go along with that. Is there a part of me that would like to kind of do it? I have to confess there is. I'm like a guy that was a, you know, heavyweight boxing champion at one point, or middleweight. Right. I'd say I was a middleweight.
Well, I saw you had a press conference with people who lost their loved ones to street violence, gun violence, or whatever. And that was really good. I thought that was important to...
I think I can serve in that way, where I can give voice to people who otherwise don't have a voice and be helpful that way without necessarily running for office. And to your first question, what party? You know, I'm a Trumpocrat, which means I'm for Donald Trump.
People know, like, yeah, Trumpocrat. What does that mean?
Means a Democrat who's for Trump, but I'm also an orphan Democrat because this Democratic Party today is a crazy party, and I don't want to be a part of that crap party. That's
and then
sure.
Be a Republican or independent or a libertarian.
Yeah, perhaps.
Yes. All right. Well, eventually you'll get over there. Let's go to Eduardo at Midway Airport.
Yeah, Rod, hopefully we'll see you at some of these events we're going to be having in September and the Freedom Summit. Question is, what do you think about having the National Guard? And also, I was in California, and of course, that's like helicopter city over there. Why don't we have more helicopters here in Chicago? We're a big city.
In other words, National Guard to go after crime, you mean? Is that it, to help the police?
Right, right. That's correct.
Yes, I think that's a very important point that you make.
Yeah.
I mean, if we value human life and we value black lives, then we should have done that a long time ago. Think about this. If that Highland Park shooting on the 4th of July happened the day after, you think Pritzker would just sit back and not really get aggressive and try to do something to protect that community? But notice how they don't do that when it comes to the black neighborhoods.
No.
It's a form of racism among today's Democratic Party. They would not allow that to happen in white neighborhoods, but they allow it to happen in black neighborhoods.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning Answer
on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.